Hi, everybody, and I'm sorry about this sun on the side of the face. It will soon, it will soon change. Anyway, I'm here in the Temple of Silence, and continuing with number 40, we've been dealing with the idea of the idol, the ideal, and the true idea, and three levels of mind corresponding. I've elaborated on that quite a bit in commentary number 39. And so we have to know in our own lives whether we are dealing with one or the other. Probably most of us have transcended captivation by the idol, but we may still be looking towards the abstract mind and its idealistic presentation. The third and sixth ray are deeply connected, we know, and the abstract mind is ruled by the third ray. And the idealism there is found on a higher mental level, but still abstract thoughts are not quite intuitions, and then when we deal with the idea, we deal with the intuition. So we're on the page 366 of this book, making our way slowly forward, and this is Rule 10. It's the 24th program on Rule 10 and the 40th program regarding rules for magic on the astral plane. So we go on. Every true student knows that this involves concentration in order to focus or orient the lower mind to the higher. Now, let's see. Then follows the work of conscious thought form building based upon these divine ideas, emanating as intuitions from the universal mind. And I suppose, in a way, maybe the lowest expression on the cosmic physical plane of the universal mind is the transcendental mind of Buddhi, the pure reason of Buddhi, and maybe the abstract mind is not really, it's kind of an extension of the universal mind, as is the mental plane. But when we want to really understand the ideas that are found in the universal mind, we need to access the transcendental mind of Buddhi. So we're kind of going on with what we've been discussing. Every true student knows that this involves concentration in order to focus and orient the lower mind to the higher. It's always, this is the building of the Antahkarana. Temporarily, the normal thought form building tendencies are inhibited, and if there is too much lower mental activity, impression from the transcendental mind, TM, from the transcendental mind cannot get through. It will be deflected, which is why we have to subdue in Raja Yoga the modifications of the versatile psychic nature and the versatile mind. Through meditation, which is the mind's power to hold itself in the light, another great definition, and in that light become aware of the plan, he learns to bring through the needed ideas. Well, this is in a way, a second stage of Antahkarana building. First, we have to reach from the mental unit to the monastic permanent atom, and then increasingly into the Buddhic sphere. So it will be deflected, and let's just say here an excellent definition of meditation. Through meditation, which is the mind's power to hold itself in the light, whether of the soul or the spiritual triad or later even the monad, and in that light become aware of the plan. See, this is going a little in the aclary process and esoteric psychology. This is going a little beyond alignment, crisis, light, revelation. That's the key. The light at first shows everything that's wrong with the individual, you know, with the energy system, the psyche, the accumulated tendencies, the skandhas, all that. But there is a greater light which brings revelation of the plan, and that's the next step. And when there is revelation of the plan, and when we begin to really work with it, eventually there will come initiation, which is aclary, you know, the last stage in that, unless we want to, you know, expand it. Through contemplation, he finds himself able to enter into that silence which will enable him to tap the divine mind, wrest God's thought out of the divine consciousness, and to know. Now, so let's see, study AAB in from intellect to intuition on contemplation. It's really good. And somehow she manages to really get this sort of difficult concept across to us in a clear way. So meditation is the first stage. Well, concentration is, then meditation, then contemplation, as we have learned. Through contemplation, he finds himself able to enter into that silence. There is a stage of identification found in the act of contemplation, progressive identification, until we reach that very high contemplative stage, which we call samadhi. And there, the illumination and inspiration which follow on contemplation are included, and probably we're knocking at the door of a rather high initiation when we can achieve samadhi, or it is the result of having achieved that rather high initiation. So through contemplation, he can tap the divine mind, wrest God's thought out of the divine consciousness, and know. We might say know directly. This is called by Master Moria straight knowledge. By Master M. Okay, and of course, the divine plan probably can be still more intimately known on the atmic plane, and as we ascend the planes on the cosmic physical plane, the divine plan as derivative or derived from the divine purpose is clarified still more. This is the work before each aspirant. Now, okay, you know, it's a generic term, this word aspirant, and it all depends upon that towards which we are aspiring. Every great being, even among the Logoi and beyond, is an aspirant towards the reunited stage of re-becoming the universal Logos in its entirety. This is the work before each aspirant, and hence the necessity of his understanding the nature of his mental problem. Well, we might say, what blocks the possibility of reaching into the realm of ideas, which are living beings, we're told, interestingly. The tools with which he must perforce work, is the mind really trained? That's the question. And the use he must make of what he learns and gains through the right use of the mental apparatus. Okay, so the aspirant must have a knowledge of his limitations, an understanding of his mental abilities, and must use knowledge correctly. Yeah. Now, how is this to be done? How bring through and how build afterwards? It's such a straight question. Touch ideas, clothe them in the proper idealistic form in the abstract mind, and build the practical thought forms which will allow some timely application of the ideas in the lower 18 subplanes. Okay, LESPs. Let's see if I can do that. L, lower 18 subplanes. I talk about it often. Lower 18 subplanes. Okay, good. How is this to be done? How bring through and how build afterwards? I mean, really, we're walking around somewhat in a prison, so a mental prison and a prison of consciousness. It's I've been dialoguing with a good friend who is so thoroughly trained in the Western ways that all of what we are discussing here appears to be the veriest nonsense. What can I say? That is the training to which we have been subjected, and only experience will help us through to go beyond our preconceptions of what is possible and realize that if something is being demonstrated and is occurring, despite the preconceptions which say that it cannot occur, it has to be acknowledged. No matter how small or unimportant the individual thinker may be, yet in cooperation with his brethren, he wields a mighty force. So hence the importance of Aquarian group consciousness, which is now growing apace. Only through the steady, strong, right thinking of the people and the understanding of the correct use of mental energy can progressive evolution go forward along the desired lines. So we must train the people in right thought, steadily and not spasmodically pursued. Right thinking depends upon many things, and it might be useful to state some of them very simply. This is such a practical book, isn't it? Okay. Upon what does right thinking depend? Of course, you know, we can't get all this with just one reading. We have to impress it upon ourselves and repeatedly. I tell you, you know, I oftentimes repeat something important three times to myself. I got that from Agni Yoga, you know. If you really, really want to drive the point home, repeat it three times. You really want to remember something, impress it, press the bridge of your nose. It seems so, it seems absurd, but there are little occult things one can do to assist the right impression of the higher energies and their availability when we really need them. So anyway, upon what does right thinking depend? Because, you know, right now, let's just say, right now, the great majority of human beings are subject to you know what I'm going to do? Yeah, GL. Okay. I'm going to make a glamour and illusion. Just call it GL. Is that okay? The Galactic Logos? No. G-A-L. G-A-I. That's better. Glamour and illusion. Are subject to glamour and illusion and cannot think correctly nor divorce themselves from Camomanus, which is never entirely clear. So anyway, this is a big job for us. The very first thing here is the ability to sense the vision, if we want right thinking. So, you know, if we want right thinking, then the ability to sense the vision, and that involves a capacity in a faint measure to realize the archetype of which the lodge, on which the lodge is endeavoring to fashion the race, and these archetypes are really found on the monadic plane and on the logoic plane. Ultimately, well, maybe not even ultimately, but at least in terms of the cosmic physical plane. It involves cooperation in the work of the Manu, who is molding the racial form, right? And the development of abstract as well as synthetic thought, the flashing forth of the intuition. So we're looking for what the lodge is trying to accomplish. The Manu, what do we say? He molds the racial form. And the development of the abstract as well as synthetic thought. Synthetic thought is beyond the abstract mind and is apparently intuitive. The flashing forth of the intuition. The intuition rests from the high places, a touch of the ideal plan, and it, as it lies latent in the mind of the Logos, from the high places, the monadic plane and the logoic plane. I don't think our intuition can yet penetrate into the true cosmic mind of the Logos. I think maybe the Buddha had that experience, that cosmic touch, as the Christ had the cosmic astral touch. That's probably very rare, you know. But anyway, the intuition is also resting. The intuition is also resting. So the intuition is active and is reaching above also. And from the high places, he doesn't distinguish, but we can imagine that the archetypes are found particularly on the two really esoteric planes of the cosmic physical plane, namely the monadic and logoic, a touch of the ideal plan as it lies latent in the mind of the logos. And that mind of the logos is going to be found, you know, on cosmic levels, finally. And it's latent, it's there, it's not yet totally applied. Let's just say, not yet totally or rightly applied. This depends on the custodians of the plan. Even more on the registrants of the purpose, which are higher than the custodians of the plan. Maybe the real registrants of the purpose are the three great lords, the Manu, the Bodhisattva, and the Mahachohan. As men develop this capacity, they will touch sources of power. Okay, like, for instance, the Atmic Plane, that are not on mental levels at all, but which constitute those from which the mental plane itself draws sustenance. So, mind is not the end. Mind is not the end at all. There are, there are sources or higher sources of mind, which stimulate and sustain the mind. So we have to remember that, you know, the Atman plane is interesting because it's the first plane of Brahma. So it has tremendous will, spiritual will involved in it, but it's also the third plane of the cosmic physical plane, and thus is associated particularly with mentality. Its symbol being the triangle, you know, and the number three. And these lives called the triple flowers are found there. It's a fleur-de-lis. France is ruled by, well, a symbol associated with France is the fleur-de-lis. France is a very much of a fifth-ray, third-ray country, and so it fits so much with the Atmic Plane. And we can see why the fleur-de-lis would be particularly associated with that country. Okay, so first, if we want right thinking, what do we do? Well, first of all, we make sure that Kama Manas is added to the dictionary. Okay, then having sensed the vision and glimpsed a fraction of the beauty, how little men see is astounding. In your hands lies the opportunity to bring down to the mental plane as much of the plan as you possibly can. So, okay, what do we have here then? Let's call it. Okay, so. Oh, this is not a valid number. Okay, thank you. Okay, then bring it down. Then having sensed the vision and glimpsed a fraction of the beauty, how little men see is astounding. You know, can only imagine the consciousness of Master DK and the kind of compassion he has for us due to the limitations of our perception. In your hands lies the opportunity to bring it down to the mental plane. Bring down to the mental plane as much of the plan as you possibly can. Nebulous and faint at first is your grasp after it, yet it will begin to materialize. So what do we say, you know, have patience with this bringing down process. It will lead to condensation and clarification. Condensation and clarification. Seldom at first will you find that you can contact it, for the vision comes through the medium of the causal body, and few can hold that high consciousness for a long time. So, okay. That's telling us something about causal consciousness, isn't it? So the vision, okay. The part played by the causal body in the registration of the vision. But the struggle to apprehend will lead to results, and little by little, the idea will seep through to the concrete levels of the mental plane. So then, do struggle. Struggle to bring through. Then it becomes a concrete thought, something that can be definitely visualized and appropriated as a basis for thought. So our task, our task is to concretize correctly the idea and use the concretization to change things in the world of phenomena. Okay, PHN, let's give that a try. Let me try that. World of PHN. Oh, I got it. PHNA. WOPHNA. Right. All right, so we brought something down, right? We have had the vision and nebulous and limited though it be, we've brought something from those higher levels down, and we've concretized that impression to a degree. We've seen it in the pattern of things through the abstract mind, and then we see it in some degree of concretion through the concrete mind. So this accomplished what comes next, if we want to think correctly. A period of gestation, a period wherein you build your thought form of as much of the vision as not foul. Goodness. See, those mistakes are existing, and they'll be gradually discovered. You know, you can't transfer this immense quantity of words without some mistakes. A period of gestation, a period wherein you build your thought form of as much of the vision as soul can bring through into your consciousness. Okay, so this is a building process, right? Okay, so let's see what we have here. And this is coming next. So we brought it down into the concrete mind, but let's just say within the concrete mind, we build. A period of gestation, a period wherein you build your thought form of as much of the vision as soul can bring through into your consciousness, remembering that to sustain causal consciousness or soul consciousness is certainly not easy. And many are the derailments, we might say, the distractions, pulling us off the track and forcing our consciousness to descend out of this area where the vision can really be seen. So this is part of the white magical process, you know. If we want to bring through what the soul sees or what our own consciousness on the higher mental plane sees, it's going to require a lot of patient, sustained alignment and the holding of a requisite point of tension. Slowly must this be done, for a stable vibration and a well-built form is desired, and hurried work leads nowhere. Such wisdom here, you know, and such a requirement upon us for real patience in the face of a process that can take many lives to perfect. As you build, there will gradually be sensed a longing, a desire. He's really repeating the white magical process in a way. You know, we're building on the mental plane, and then we're adding the intensity of the Agni Suryans, the desire body, the longing for incarnation, for that idea, which has become a thought form. As you build, there will gradually be sensed a longing, a desire to see this vision brought to earth and see it becoming known to others among the sons of men. So, let's just say, desire for manifestation of the thought form increases. Then you vitalize the thought form with the power of your will. You seek to make it be, and this involves etheric application. Vitalization. This is really a repeat of the magical process. Then you vitalize your thought form, because you can desire to have it manifest, but desire alone probably is not enough. It has to have the vitality to, in a way, fight its way through and into and through the ancient fires of the dense physical levels. And this is where, you know, and we're going to learn about this as we go on, many abortions occur. Okay, so the rhythm becomes heavier and slower. The material built into your form is necessarily coarser. And you find that your thought form of the vision is clothed in matter of the mental and astral planes. So we have the coarsening of the idea, the ideal, as it becomes more and more concrete through the building in of lower mental and astral matter. Okay, I'm just amazed. In the beginning of the Arcane School, I think I joined in 1972, so that's going to be like 46 years ago right now, just about now. And A Treatise on White Magic was one of the first books after Light on the Path that we're going to be reading, and did read, and I read with care, and I think I did, although now when I look at it, I wonder if I did. There's so much in it that even evades more intensive study like this. Well, it evades the kind of study I gave it. Now, maybe a little bit more will come through with this kind of line-by-line, word-by-word analysis of what is being said, again, realizing that much is necessarily left out. Well, now, next. Happy the disciple who can bring the vision nearer to humanity and work it into existence on the physical plane. Maybe a few of us from time to time experience that inner satisfaction, always coupled with the realization of how little really has been done. But okay, bring the vision nearer still to humanity. For myself, I have the vision of these esoteric schools. It captivates my thought and sets for me a path for the future, at least in terms of what I can realize at this moment. And are these different organizations, the Seven Ray Institute, the University of Seven Rays, the Moria Federation, are they bringing this aspect of the plan, you know, the creation of the banded esoteric organisms? Are these institutions bringing this nearer to the physical plane? Well, I hope so, and let's see. Remember this, that the materialization of any aspect of the vision on the physical plane is never the work of one man. And that's the group consciousness, and, you know, so many have been involved in this. And as we see that, even from the very beginning with Master DK and his groups and everything that the reason we have these books, this great teaching, Alice Bailey was the source, but she couldn't have done it alone, could she? The editors were needed, the printers, the proofreaders, the, you know, all those making an office function. Only when it has been sensed by the many, only when they have worked at its material form, can their united efforts draw it out into manifestation. So, a certain critical mass of would-be manifestors is required. And, you know, those did come around Alice Bailey. They were attracted and they assisted, even, you know, financing the books. One of the disciples, in relation to whom great lessons could be learned, came in with the money. And as Master DK, you said, you will see that we are not ungrateful, even though this man had many problems. But sometimes reading the discipleship letters of the people who had many problems, we learn a lot. There's so much to be learned from discipleship in the New Age, and no question that if we continue in earnest on this path, we will be in touch with Master DK, and teaching will be given, certain advice will be given that will facilitate progress upon the path. Thus, you see the value of educating public opinion. It brings the many helpers to the aid of the few visionaries. That's one of the, that's another angle on it, isn't it? You know, not just that we get more intelligent voting, which we do, and greater acceptance in the consciousness of humanity, but it actually brings in the helpers. So this is so important, right? Bringing in the helpers. And, you know, I guess I remember the very first time I was in Maine in the United States. I was looking out over the water, and I seem to remember at the back of the book, training in discipleship is offered by the Arcane School, something to that effect. And really hit me that amazing, the training should be offered. So, you know, I became a helper sometimes. And thus it is, we're drawn in. He tells us, please use Discipleship in the New Age, Volume 1, to draw people towards the ashram and into the ashram. Maybe Volume 2 is a little difficult, or maybe when he wrote that, Volume 2 had not yet been created. But what a great teaching, and how it flows forth to uplift all of those who are serious about learning it. Always the law holds good. In descent, differentiation. the two or three in descent differentiation, indeed. And that's the emanation, that's emanation theory, isn't it? I mean, there's so much of emanation theory. One doesn't know about the past, and maybe one was trained as a Buddhist, but I always thought that emanation made a lot of sense. And I didn't derive my own understanding of it from reading much about it, or maybe anything about it. But I discovered that this is, in fact, the case. The one become the many through emanation, which is descent while preserving the essence, in descent differentiation. Let's just say, I think I will say, this is one of the major factors exhibited by emanation. The two or three sense the plan intuitively. Well, there's Blavatsky, there's Colonel Olcott, maybe, two of them, and then many gathered around them, eventually. Then the rhythm they set up with their thought sweeps the mental plane, matter into activity. Thinkers seize hold of the idea. This is a hard thing to learn and difficult to do, but the reward is great. So let's say, be a source. Be a source which will help to gather the helpers. And I think, to a degree, we all do this. When you declare yourself and you say, okay, this is what I stand for. This is the teaching I'm propagating. Some will resonate to the note of that teaching and be drawn to the light, whatever light we can propagate. To those who wrestle, strive, and hold on, this is one of those great quotes which is repeated more than once, to those who wrestle, strive, and hold on, the joy is doubled when the materialization comes. Here's the problem, though, the problem is that some prematurely let go. Now, letting go is great in terms of identification with lesser things or mistaken identity regarding lesser things, confusing the self you are with lesser things. That's fine, but letting go of the plow when you're in the field, trying to work in the lower 18 subplanes for the burgeoning of the teaching, so you're planting the seeds and watching them grow and all that. So you see how it is that paradoxes abound, let go and yet don't let go. It depends on the context. The joy of contrast will be yours for knowing the past of darkness. You will revel in the light of fruition. Well, I think sometimes we have to bear this past of darkness quite a while. But we must persist and not let go, or should we say, not let go, even while letting go. So it's a dual life. The joy of tried and tested companionship will be yours, for years will prove to you who are your chosen associates, and in community of suffering will come the strengthening link. No doubt, Masters M and KH are linked that way, and Master DK with them, and the members of the Brotherhood linked together, finding each other eventually, even though they may have been in many different countries and perhaps not even knowing each other personally, but eventually they will recognize that they've been working together on a common project. The joy of tried and tested companionship will be yours. And I think, when you get to be a bit older, then some of that is coming through. I mean, you really know, begin to know who are your chosen co-workers. For the years, and it takes years, will have proved to you who are your chosen associates, and in the community of suffering will come the strengthened link. So, okay, come. If I can get back there. And I think what we want to say here is that suffering brings strength. That's basically what he's telling us. I mean, certainly if suffering is wisely used. The joy of peace after victory will be yours. For the tired warrior, for to the tired warrior, the fruits of achievement and rest are doubly sweet. The joy of participation in the Master's plan will be yours, and all is well that associates you closely with them. And we remember, I think it's pretty much Master M's statement, it is a joy to do the Master's work. This is the promise, you know, the promise of the reward. Maybe it doesn't touch the personality per se. We're told to look on and see our life spent for nothing that touches the personality, but then again, as we are slowly realizing that we are not the personality, we don't care so much. Just as long as it touches what we think and know ourselves to be in a higher way. The joy of having helped, I love this though, that and all is well that associates you with them. So, you know, it comes back to Master Moria. Master Moria's very declarative statement, must we shout it in your ears, hierarchy, something like that. The joy of having helped to solace a needy world, of having brought light to darkened souls, of having healed in some measure the open sore of the world's distress will be yours. And in the consciousness of days well spent, and in the gratitude of salvaged souls, comes the deepest joy of all. The joy a master knows when he is instrumental in lifting a brother up a little higher on the ladder. Oh gosh, you know, it's so beautiful. The joy a master knows in the gratitude of salvaged souls, in the consciousness of days well spent. One wishes one could spend days just a little bit better, and sometimes karma enters and you wonder, you know, you'd like to be doing more of this, but concrete things demand attention. But this is so very beautiful somehow. This vision that DK gives as an incentive for all of us. Of course, you know, it's not so much that we're interested in these end results. They come naturally when we're interested in the welfare of, as the Buddhists would say, all sentient beings. This is the joy that is set before you, and not so very far it lies ahead. And so basically he's saying the same thing here. So work not for joy, but towards it. Not for reward, but from the inner need to help. Not for gratitude, but from the urge that comes from having seen the vision and realization of the part you have to play in bringing that vision down to earth. I find this to be a marvelous section for incentive, but he does balance the picture, doesn't he? You know, he's saying, look, don't work here for the joyous end in view. Work for the true motive. And that true motive is helping, solacing, saving. And then all these other things will be added unto us, and we may enjoy them, but we're not working towards our own enjoyment. But generally, if we can bring the vision down to earth, I think he's saying it is a joy to bring the vision down to earth. And certainly we've experienced that. I mean, you just know that after somehow you have served successfully in just even a little part, you know, help bring a little light, little clarity, little enthusiasm, a little liberation from a previous condition. There is a little stream of joy that rises in the heart. Or wherever it rises, it rises. It is helpful to differentiate between happiness, joy, and bliss. And of course, those of us who are somewhat familiar with the teaching, we've been like quoting this forever. And I guess this is the source of it to be repeated. First, happiness, which has its seat in the emotions and is a personality reaction. Okay, well, sometimes the term happiness is used generically, and sometimes it is used with great specificity. Secondly, joy, which is the quality of the soul and is realized in the mind when alignment takes place. That is, when we're really aligned with the soul, and I suppose even more, functioning within the causal body and sustaining that functioning, which is not so easy. Okay, joy is realized in the mind. We should really meditate on these things. And I suppose, in a way, it subsumes a kind of happiness, even though from outer appearances, the personality should look like it to others, like it should be unhappy. And third, so personality, soul, and now spirit. Third, bliss, which is of the nature of the spirit, and about which speculation is fruitless until the soul realizes its oneness with the Father. Well, we know the words, bliss and the Father, bliss and the Father, bliss and oneness. Let's just say joy and unity. And here we'll put bliss and oneness. And happiness. Oopsie. We'll put here happiness as the fulfillment of one aspect of the lower life. Or maybe even personality success within a limited context. And yet there must be more, and yet there must be more. It will always come, the realization that there must be more. So bliss, oneness, and indestructibility as a being with that. And an immense future, which in a way already forever exists, which is a paradox. I sometimes say to myself, well, you know, every being is absolute infinity, essentially. And what are the implications of that? And more, because absolute articulated infinity is somehow less than absoluteness. which is unarticulated. By articulation, I mean the divisions of the many into many within the one. So this realization follows upon an earlier stage wherein the personal self is at one with the soul. So at one meant with the soul is a precursor to the realization of oneness. Therefore, speculation and analysis as to the nature of bliss is profitless to the average man whose metaphors and terminologies must perforce be personal and related to the world of the senses. Does the aspirant refer to his happiness or joy? Well, I think, you know, if we're being specific, we'll have to refer to one or the other. Sometimes in Agni Yoga, Master Maurya says, well, if the average man or the person who knows nothing about the yoga asks you, why do you practice the yoga? And you tell him that you may be happy. If he refers to the latter, it must come as the effect of group consciousness, of group solidarity, of oneness with all beings, and may not be interpreted in terms of normal happiness at all. Normal, personal, well-being. So, joy requires group consciousness. Happiness comes when the personality is meeting with those conditions which satisfy it in one part or other of its lower nature. As I say, it's partial. It comes when there is a sense of physical well-being, of contentment with one's environment and surrounding personalities, or of satisfaction with one's mental opportunities and contacts. Happiness, and this is the big one, is the goal of the separated self, if we're being technically accurate about it, not using it in the generic sense, you know, like you can use illusion, glamour, and Maya in general senses as well as in specific senses. When, however, well, I'll tell you what, we're getting near the end here. And I think it would be best to call this right now. We're on page 370. And 370, yeah. I think, you know, it's very clear what we're going to be continuing with. So let's let's call this one to an end, this program. I always like to go on, you know, but duties call, they do. And also, it does seem easier for many people to assimilate a one-hour program than to go with some of those five-hour programs I was once making. Okay, so anyway, this is the end, and it has been 366 to 370, and we're dealing with the 3rd of September. Now, this is next one's going to be number 41. Sometimes I miss here, and we're going to start from 370 and go forward, and it's going to be the 25th program in Rule 10. Can you imagine? Heavens. So, telling me I can't save, you know. And I'm just going to hope that I have succeeded in saving a little. And going to look here. Treatise on White Magic, video commentary, 3-9-1828. Yeah, we're good. Okay. I think it's just that it's such a big file, you know, the entire book plus whatever I'm writing in here, and it doesn't save so easily. So, okay, friends, we'll go on to the 25th program, which is really the 41st program for the rules of magic on the astral plane, and certainly we get the sense that we're being very well and practically instructed in transforming our personality so we become an effective unit in helping to bring the divine plan into expression. However small that expression may be when dealing with our own limited capabilities. So we'll move on as best we can and study hard. Love and many blessings.